Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was My Bright Fantasy by Future Star. I am realizing now the instrumental version for some reason. The version we have here at the station has no words. If you want to hear that song with words, you can check out the release. It's About Time by Future Star on Bandcamp. I recommend it. The words are great, and the vocals are also great. And I'll talk to the people behind the scenes here and see if we can't get a version with words for you too. Yeah, this is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I said that. We just heard a piece from Danny about the Neil Squire Society's holiday hackathon. And we're just going to keep the LJI Local Journalism Initiative funded reporting train going with a new version of a piece you might have heard on this show last week. Last week I played the full interview with John Stark and Brad Davies and a brief appearance by Ria Renouf about the New Westminster Crises Response Pilot Project. And just to remind you and to give you a little bit of a condensed recap, here is a new version of that, produced by yours truly. That's me, Jesse.
People sleeping in the streets, untreated mental illness, and drug addiction are widespread issues in cities across the continent, and municipal governments are scrambling to respond. John Stark is the manager of community planning at the City of New Westminster.
We know with regards to the pandemic that all municipalities, with regards to these crises, there's been an increase. Between 2020 and 2023, based on our point-in-time homeless count, there was a 65% increase in homelessness in New Westminster. And our neighboring municipalities had similar or higher increases in homelessness. Combined with that, we have the opioid epidemic. And we also know with the pandemic that isolation became an issue. A number of faith-based and nonprofits closed their doors, just like civic facilities. And this really, for people who were dealing with mental health issues, there was definitely individuals who self-medicated to deal with this isolation and loneliness.
Instead of trying to solve each crisis independently, the Crises Response Project aims to understand how each issue affects the other and to find compassionate, innovative, and goal-driven ways to address the crises.
The Crisis Response Pilot Project addresses the three crises of homelessness, mental health, and substance use. So we saw these three crises definitely take hold. And as a municipality, we realized that the status quo couldn't continue, that if we really wanted to make progress, we couldn't just look at one crisis because we'd have limited effectiveness. We'd have to look at three because they're interrelated. We also recognized that these are senior government responsibilities, but we needed to do something in the interim as we work with the senior levels of government with regards to the funding and resources.
The project, initially launched in September, is a new approach based on lessons learned from wide-ranging research into existing literature and approaches taken by other municipalities around the world. Brad Davey is New Westminster's assistant fire chief.
The most unique part, I think, is our approach. One of the first things that we did is we looked at some of the literature that is out there. And as John has already said, we looked at all the other municipalities. We're not actually copying what anybody else has done. Instead, we're trying to cherry pick the approaches from the other different municipalities that are working. And then we have quite an active program involved to try to make sure that we engage everybody so that we can be iterative in our approach and that we can adjust to identify any gap that's being missed or anything that we need to engage or to include anybody that could be affected by these crises, so that they have a voice to point us in the right direction if we need to improve anything.
The project is still in its infancy, having launched less than 3 months ago, and Davey and Stark recognize that solutions will not be immediate. Despite the long-term outlook, there are already some positive early results.
These types of changes, like we're talking about supportive housing, this is a two-year pilot project. Some of these changes will take 3 to 5 years longer, really for substantive change to be seen. So we have to show in that two-year period that we are making progress, that plans are in place. We've heard from businesses and residents that they want a vision. For some businesses, they're looking at potentially extending their leases. They want to know what the plan is for the city. So we're looking at that. A big part of that is relationship building with the senior levels of government, either for funding this pilot beyond the 2 years or addressing the needs and gaps related to the three crises. And we've had a lot of success. I mean, an initial piece of success was human waste is an issue in our city. Businesses and residents raise it on a pretty well daily basis. It's an issue in all municipalities. But we worked with BC Housing. We now have a sanitation trailer, which offers toilets, sinks, and showers. It operates 24/7. It has attendant services, and BC Housing is covering the full cost of that. So that's been a plus, and we're starting to see some of the positive impacts with regards to a reduced amount of human waste and fewer complaints.
Getting residents and businesses on board will be essential to the project's success. So public engagement is a key focus, with plenty of feedback already gathered.
We've actually done more than one public engagement session. We've met on several occasions with the Downtown Residents Association, on several occasions with the Downtown Business Improvement Association. We had a joint session with the Downtown Business Improvement Association, the Chamber of Commerce, where we also reached out to faith-based and nonprofits. I will say with residents and businesses, there is kind of a wait and see, you know, wanting to see how the situation will improve, and a lot of questions. But I will say, I think when the information is shared, and they get a better understanding of the scope of the pilot and the fact that it's iterative and it is being independently evaluated and it's based on best practices, I think if we can demonstrate that we're not only meeting the needs of the unhoused and those living with mental health and substance use issues, but businesses and residents as to some of the impacts they're experiencing, I think we'll definitely get more buy-in for the pilot. And we're hoping that businesses and residents will help us advocate for needed services and supports, including supportive housing. And part of that is being out in the community, answering questions, being accessible.
While there are questions about whether the city should be funding this project, which tackles issues that are typically the responsibilities of provincial and federal governments, and about the effectiveness of certain proposed solutions, Stark says that the Crisis Response Pilot Project arose from a need to take action instead of waiting for a perfect, fully funded solution from senior levels of government.
With regards to businesses, we have to realize if we're bringing people inside, whether that's a 24/7 emergency shelter or that supportive housing, those individuals are not sheltering in parks and business alcoves and doorways, open burning to keep warm or to cook, discarding belongings. They have access to toilets, which they may not have. So really, in a lot of ways, it's addressing some of the issues which they're concerned about. And I think we have to change the conversation around that. And part of that is bring them on side that not doing anything is not an option anymore, that we need to do something and that this will have positive impacts. It may take some time, but it will have positive impacts. And enforcement is also not a solution because it just moves the issue from one area to another. And the courts have stated that people are allowed to shelter overnight in public places. So we do have to look at longer term strategies.
The New West Crises Response Pilot Project presented an update to New Westminster City Council on November 18th, and will continue to work towards solving the intersecting crises of homelessness, mental health, and substance abuse while continuously gathering data and modifying its approach accordingly.
There are too many people right now who are unhoused, who are living with mental health and substance use issues. So my hope is that we do provide those facilities, services, and supports so they can become either sheltered or housed, stabilize their lives, connect to services, and over a period of time, have the ability to be part of a community. And that's so important, that whole belonging, connecting. I've always heard that one of the, for someone who's unhoused, is that feeling of feeling invisible, sitting on a sidewalk and people just walking by and not noticing them. I want to see these individuals feel part of a community, feel connected to a community, feel valued, and have the ability to make a contribution. And I also realize, being a social planner, because I'm going through two temporary use permits related to shelter proposals, is that the community better understands these issues, recognizes just how even childhood trauma can impact a person for the rest of their lives, and through providing supports and services, that change can happen.
From New Westminster, Jesse Wentzloff, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, reporting. This coverage is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this story online at frequencynews.ca.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe. Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
That's right. Welcome back to CJSF. This is Speak Up. We'll be back to the talk in a little bit after an extended instrumental break. This is New Father John Misty. I guess time just makes fools of us all.
Our naked bodies go on trial just for laughing at the joke, just for saying of the bargain what any sales girl already knows. Most of us old men die at the firing line, just waiting for our number to be called. I guess time just makes fools of us all. Now the king regales his stepsons when he's loaded a gun, says a real name, it's like a country, you need a map to find you one. Now I do, you suppose you must approach the throne with its back up against the wall. I guess time just makes fools of us all. Generation, gladly conscripted in the war of defending any Goliath that would deign darken the door. Now with your genius for picking battles, it's no wonder every helmet is too small. I guess time just makes fools. I guess time just makes fools of us all. My drink is watered down. The champ is on his knees. He lost the rematch. He lost the comeback. He lost for charity. But that's the job. It's what gets the asses in the hall. They came for a beating, and he came to brawl. I have known. Yours is easily the least famous to turn down the cover of a Rolling Stone. Lily white faces, so familiar and yet impossible to recall. I guess time just makes fools of us all. After a millennia of good times, God said, hey now, let's have a dream where we raise the stakes a little. Come on, let's make things interesting. Parachute into the Anthropocene. An amnesiac, a himbo can doll. Make fools of us all. coiled up behind the truck, put it in reverse and hit him clean. Something he said went in and stuck. Hey, I can sell you a million records. I mean, your image could use an overhaul. Headed southbound, the losers exodus. That's where you'll find me, in Las Vegas, doing my greatest hits, me and Dixie. We had ourselves a ball. I followed my dreams, and my dreams said crawl.
Extended cut from the new Father John Misty record, Mahash Mashana, which is actually just a whole bunch of extended cuts. 8 songs, an hour runtime. Love it. I say guilty pleasures, not because the music's bad. The music's great. Josh Tillman, the frontman, is very self-involved and pretentious, but sometimes it's worth it. I recommend checking out the new record if you like what you heard there. That was, I guess, Time Makes Fools of Us All, off of Mahash Mashana. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM, and we are going to hear one final bit of talk content, this one sourced from CFUR in Prince George. But first, this...
Good morning. It's Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby. We just danced our way awake with Soul Makassa.
Yeah, I'm a young black man who uses art to champion and celebrate blackness, as well as creating art that showcases black men as comprehensive, emotionally intelligent human beings.
Right now, we are going to hear a spoken word rap piece by Slam Poetry winner JB, the First Lady. That is Lady Johnny Proby singing Don't Quit, and here at Speak Up, we do not quit. Love, laughter, argument, and encouragement. the words are too few for the essence of you. And it shows just one of the ways that you can take feelings of pain and transform them to love and recognition. Today, we're exploring senior issues through digital media and the creative arts. My guests are Leslie Riemann, the director of the 411 Center, and Joel Flynn from Podstream. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, welcoming you to the Friday Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon What You've Heard show. We have conversations about social issues, culture, and creative arts events, potent samplings about special months like Health Month, Black History Month, Women's Month, Nutrition Month, and more. See you Friday at 10 a.m.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Dr. Luna Casey, Assistant Professor in Global International Studies at the University of Northern British Columbia, joins us today in CIFA Radio Studios. She's recently made a splash at UMBC as a recipient of a $50,000 Mobilizing Insights in Defense and Security, or MINDS, grant from the Department of National Defense. Dr. Casey has embarked on an innovative research project to develop a women's cyber defense toolkit. Many would think that deleting social media accounts as quickly as possible is a logical first step. It removes a medium that the instigator is using to harass the individual. It seems perfectly reasonable. But this isn't actually that helpful of a course of action, is it?
No, no.
Why is that?
Just deleting social media account or, you know, limiting the presence of women and girls online only disempower them, right? Because now, given that internet has so much of power to advance your career, your like everything has been digitalized. So keeping women and girls away from these social media and cyber platform will only disempower them. So I think we need more, you know, rights and, you know, regulations for them to keep active. Yeah. Yeah. And I think also, you know, it's also difficult to prove that. And now, like, we are coming into that state that, you know, where people are, you know, people have started to realize that cyber violence or, you know, this tech facilitated violence has a real life consequences, right? And it's very difficult to, you know, make people understand that these violence exist. And in a time where even, you know, physical gender-based violence have not taken seriously, and then, you know, if you talk about cyber violence, then it's even more difficult to make people understand that this violence has a real consequences, or, you know, it can impact people in a, you know, like a physical violence, right? Because otherwise, I know that some of my respondents have shared with me that there is no proper reporting mechanism for online violences, right? Because you really have to prove them. And how are you going to prove it, right? And there is also very easy way to delete them or, you know, change the things, make it fake with this deepfake, you know, coming so rapidly around. So it's really difficult. So I hope that this toolkit, we are going to make some of these points clear to people who are facing this sort of challenges in their everyday life.
The issue of online cyber harassment is quite large. This is being looked at on a national level, perhaps even global. Is this really something that affects us in Prince George?
Oh, yeah, I think absolutely, because like we discussed, because, you know, this is not one place problem, right? It's like very widespread, and you know, it impacts everyone. And last time I was chatting with some of these women leaders or women who works on these shelters, women shelters, right? One of them were mentioning that, you know, most of this, you know, violence that have been reported and this women fleeing violence are starting from you know, digitalization or from online violence. So either someone has texted them, or maybe, you know, they became friends on Facebook. So most of this violence today are starting from online. And definitely, you know, this is something very much widespread. And obviously, you know, the cyber violence is also Prince George issues as well. Not only, you know, our central issue, but it is also very local issue as well. Yeah.
developing a women's cyber defense toolkit would be an excellent resource for probably anyone directly or indirectly dealing with online harassment. You've touched on the layers of complexity in this issue, though, and it seems that a lot of research has to be undertaken in order to develop a helpful resource like this toolkit. While you are performing most of that research at the University of Northern British Columbia, are there opportunities for our local population to participate in that research or to inform some of the information that you're gathering for this Women's Cyber Defense Toolkit project?
Yeah, so in my last workshop that I held, this workshop was twofold. The morning session was there were also people joining on online, through in from Vancouver, Ottawa, Toronto, and different regions. And then the second half was only in person. So majority of them were students and also people from local community, especially from Prince George. And so we discussed very interesting questions. And then all these, the practical recommendations and the political recommendations, which this toolkit will build on, was based on very localized, experiences, their everyday experiences, right? And also very evidence-based, because people were sharing their personal experiences, the experience of their neighborhood, and student as an, youth, how do they, are they tackling everyday violence in their own context? So yeah, I think this is very much localized. In this toolkit, I'm also trying to highlight some issues around intersectional collaborations. Intersectional collaboration is not something just bringing people from diverse background just to fill the chair or something, or tokenized collaboration, but also, really taking diverse perspective seriously. So that's why I have a diverse group of people in my research team, and my respondents coming from women of color, black women, women coming from minority groups. So I'm really looking forward how the intersectional collaboration will help shape this toolkit.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca.
Hi, I'm